Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Or on Twitter at CLE Talking Heads. Let's go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. We bring in Laura Rutledge from ESPN. You know her better from Get Up, but she covers the SEC and college football, and she knows it better than anybody else. Hi, Laura. How are you?
I'm great.
We're good. I don't know if the line just broke up there for a second. Are you still there?
I am here. I don't know if it was a breakup or if it could have just been my baby who is wanting to talk to you guys too.
All right.
No problem.
Now we're talking.
How old's the baby?
She is almost 7 months old. She'll be 7 months in a few days.
7 months. So you guys are probably getting sleep now, right?
Yeah, a whole lot of sleep coming our way, right?
It only gets better. It only gets better. Laura, hey, just I want to start things off with just talking about the Browns and the SEC because they went on a pretty good SEC run there, and your thoughts on that?
Yeah, to me, when you look at this class, it was a deep class from a tackle standpoint, but to get Wills, he was, even in a deep class, the best tackle option there. And I think just the versatility from him, you know, and a guy that has been a consistent starter and really hasn't missed games, and he's been somebody that, you know, has been super reliable. To me, that was a smart pick. And I've already been on record saying that I think the Browns are going to take a big jump this year and kind of be that team that we thought they'd be last year, right? I was bought in last year, and I think that might have been a little premature for a variety of reasons. But just, you know, shoring up the offensive line is such a big deal. So I love that pick by the Browns. And then, you know, to get Delpit is great too. He's a guy that some said, you know, look, maybe he'll go a little higher than what he did. And so I think what the Browns got in getting him where they did is going to be a surefire defensive contributor for a long time. He's somebody that has a great motor, has been continually a hard worker. There's a reason why he won awards at the college level, and there's a reason why he was part of a national championship team. And I think when you think about LSU, you know, so many people talk about Joe Burrow and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and it was a team that was just stacked of talent. But Grant Delpit was a big-time force and a big-time leader on the defensive side of the ball. So I think that's another thing that you're getting from a guy that, even though he'll be coming in as a rookie, already possesses a lot of experience and big-time moments, and certainly, you know, a lot of leadership capability as well.
Laura, the word on Delpit is that his last year was not as good as his sophomore year, and the tackling seemed to be an issue. Any idea what happened there, and is it anything that should concern the Browns and Browns fans?
So I think one thing that's key with Delpit this past season is that he wasn't healthy for a portion of the season and was still trying to kind of play anyway, and it wasn't good. You know, he was trying to play at a high level in a very tough league and wasn't completely healthy, and I think that contributed to a lot of it. But, you know, the other thing, too, is, and I think Delpit would say this himself, there were times where I think he got caught up in trying to be too much for a team that, you know, was on a championship run and had a ton of pressure on him all the time. And so once he kind of got out of that, he started to play better. And if you look at the film, there was a lull in his play toward the middle of the season when he was dealing with some injury and, you know, even missed a little bit of time for that. But then when he kind of ramped it back up again, he was more of that force. Even if it didn't always show up on the stat sheet, if you actually watch the film, there's a lot that he did that I think, you know, would be something to be positive about. But look, I'll say this too about Delpit. He is a little bit raw in some ways, and he does probably have some things he can work on from a technique standpoint with the tackling. I think had he been, you know, to your point, had he been what he was his sophomore season and didn't kind of have some of that inconsistency, I don't know that the Browns would have gotten him as late as they got him. So I think that's something where you may look back and say that that pick ends up looking like a little bit of a steal down on later on in his career.
Laura Rutledge, nice enough to join us from ESPN, covers the SEC. I want to go back to Jedrick Wills here just for a second. Just, you know, there was a lot of talk before the draft in Cleveland about a tackle is a tackle, whether right side or left side, it doesn't matter. Does it matter here for the Browns at all? And do you say, okay, well, look, he was playing for a left-handed quarterback, so it made sense that he was on the right-hand side?
Yeah, you know, I think what's key with Wills is that he can play both sides. And I don't know that it matters necessarily, but he's somebody that, and that's something that Saban did consistently with this offensive line, is really had them playing all positions. I think there's a factor there where people know that it's probably beneficial to be able to play as many positions as you can as an offensive lineman, but to be able to play both sides is really important. And he had experience, you know, doing that, whether it was in practice or, you know, even other opportunities. So I would not worry about that as much. I think when you guys see this guy out there, he's one of the more NFL ready offensive linemen that's come out of college in recent memory, in my opinion. And I've seen a lot of them, the line of scrimmage league and the SEC. We see a lot of these big guys come out, and I really think that Wills is going to be impressive. And, you know, the thing too about Alabama that people forget, because so much of the conversation has been on Tua, and it's a changed offense that was really kind of ushered in by Lane Kiffin a couple years ago, where they certainly throw the ball and they had these great receivers, but they ran the ball well too. And that's always been a focus of a Nick Saban team, no matter what. They never really get that far away from it. They only have a few times and it hasn't worked out well. So he was a big part on that offensive line of solidifying the run game. So I think I think people are going to be really thrilled with him.
Laura, Jordan Elliott came to the Browns in the third round, and I think he might be the most mysterious guy the Browns drafted, the defensive tackle out of Missouri. Good size, seems to have good abilities. What have you heard about him?
Yeah, he is a little bit of a mystery. And look, some of that has to do with the fact that, you know, we just didn't see Missouri factor in that well, you know, and so a lot of it is, well, is he even really any good because he's on this team that didn't do a whole lot. But I, from what I've heard from, you know, talking to coaches that have worked with him, he's somebody that knows he may have some things to prove and is ready to do that. And I was speaking even with an NFL scout just the other day about him, who said that, you know, they were really interested in him just because they felt like they could do a variety of things with him. So I think that's also, I'll continue to say it, I'm impressed with the Browns draft, and I think he's another piece of that just allows depth to it, adds depth to what they've done. So it is interesting that they went heavy SEC, but I don't think that will hurt them in the long run. I think it'll be only a positive.
Hey, I'm just curious, what are your thoughts on Baker Mayfield? Just, I don't know, Big 12, but still just knowing what he was able to do and how he'll be able to connect with Wills and what he needs to do coming back this season.
Yeah, well, I cover all of football, so I've right, definitely yeah. you know, spent a lot of time covering Baker and know him, and I really think that Baker's poised for a breakout season, kind of similar to the season that we saw before last year. I just think, you know, and we saw him, you know, kind of admit to this when he came on our show at the Super Bowl, when he came on Get Up, and you know, some of that had to do with some of Rex Ryan's comments. But either way, he said, you know, might have got caught up a little bit too much in the outside noise. And truly, you know, this is a guy who, as you guys know well, has been through so much as an athlete, as a quarterback, as somebody who has kind of been doubted for so long. And I think, you know, finally when he wasn't doubted and when everything was sort of on his shoulders for making this run that people were expecting out of the Browns, I just think it got a little bit to him. And I think he's going to come back this year stronger than ever. And it certainly helps to solidify the offensive line with Wills. I think there'll be an immediate connection. I expect Baker to put in time there and Wills on his side to do that as well. But I would just be very shocked if we're not talking about the Browns as more of a contender this year. And I even just recently wrote a piece that we put on Get Up about the fact that this is going to be a breakout season for him again. And I say breakout because, you know, look, he already has kind of had that, but I think there was so much more that could even be done, even the year that he provided so much hope for Browns fans. I think this is maybe finally our foray into really what the Browns fans can expect out of Baker for years to come. He's a good quarterback, guys. People, you know, like to look back and say, well, you know, he made this mistake and that mistake. He's a really good quarterback, and especially with maybe a little bit more time bought from his O-line, which I hope will happen, and with the addition of Will, I think he can really make some noise in the NFL this year.
Laura Rutledge joining us, co-host of Get Up. You see her on ESPN every morning. I must ask you about two of the guys you work with. Number one, Richard Jefferson, who former Cavalier, who did all kinds of stuff here in Cleveland, and you knew he was going to be doing some television down the road. And then you mentioned your buddy Rex Ryan. What is with Rex and Baker? Laura,
well, okay.
Rex kills him. What is it?
I know. I'll start with Rex. Let me just say this. You know, Rex Ryan is somebody who will continually say things that kind of makes you laugh, shake your head, you know, whatever it may be. But I do think he means well, and sometimes just stuff comes out of his mouth. And that's who he is, right? That's who he's always been. So I admire him for staying true to that. And I will say, I mean, you know, it seems like he sort of had this feud going with Baker. I'm not even sure how real that is on Rex's side. But what I would say is if I'm a Browns fan, I love Rex Ryan because it might have lit some sort of fire under Baker Mayfield that I'm telling you, when Baker's at his best, it's when there's some sort of fire lit under him. So who knows? We'll see if that ends up really coming to fruition. And then as for RJ, he's the best. He's hilarious. He is one of the funniest people that I've ever worked with. And, you know, if you watch Get Up on a regular basis when he's on, he has this thing that he liked to do, you know, when we were able to be in the studio in New York, which we will get back to at some point. But at least before the COVID-19 pandemic, he would stick his fingers in people's water cup as we would start the show. And every single time I would be sitting there thinking, I am so glad that I don't have to sit next to RJ because, like, you can't drink your water for the rest of the show or whatever you have in your cup. You're just done because he stuck his fingers in there. And we would tell him, like, don't do that. And then he would do it every time. So he's like a little kid in an NBA player's body, but he's the best and he's so much fun.
Yeah, just be careful if you guys win an Emmy or something, there's champagne floating around the green room and everything. He might retire on you at the moment and then go back 5 minutes later and go, nah, I was just kidding. No big deal.
Yeah, exactly. You never know with him.
Hey, Laura, let me throw this question at you just because, you know, we've talked about it a couple times, just the importance of college football in the economic scheme of all sports for all universities. Your thoughts on that and how important it is to try to get a college football season in next year,
yeah,
if they can. And, you know, is it – I just, like, I can't see a college football game being played in an empty stadium. To me, it just seems it's too hard to fathom. Just your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, not only is it too hard to fathom, but it's not going to work financially to try to do college football without the fans. It's totally different from the NFL. You know, in the NFL, fan attendance accounts for about 15% of their overall revenue. In college football, in a lot of these programs, it's anywhere from 70 to 80%. I mean, it's a large, large, large portion. Now, some of that has to do with, you know, fan bases, like let's say Ohio State, that's going to have a huge fan base show up. Some of the smaller schools may not have that, but either way, it's crucial. And we're talking about over $4.1 billion just from the 50-plus public universities and Power 5 conferences. So it's an incredible amount of money that is needed to fuel these universities. It's not just, oh, man, you know, well, the football program may suffer a little bit. No, everything suffers. And so I believe firmly that there will be a college football season in the 2020-21 school year. So that means, you know, we could be talking about pushing this thing all the way back to maybe the spring. And people, every time I say that, people laugh at me. Let me just make it clear. I'm talking to some people that are very close to this situation and very high up in college athletics and many college coaches. And I think there's a thought of, it would be catastrophic to start the season and have to stop it. And so even if you push it back a little bit, if they're forced to do that, you have to maybe see what this virus does in a full weather calendar. That's one of the big issues in all of this. Either way, from everybody that I talk to, they are still trying to plan to start this season on time. But I would throw a couple things at you when thinking about this. If you don't have students on campus and they're doing online classes, which is basically the case for every university. They're all closed over the summer. How can you ask student athletes to show up and be on campus? And that's a big dilemma in all of this as they look at this. The other thing, too, that I think coaches that I've talked to are all over the map on this. Some say, hey, we'll just get guys in and we'll just get ready and we'll go play. Others say, no, we're going to need a full 6 weeks to get guys ready. It's going to have to be even as possible across the board. So it's very complicated. But like I said, they are going to have to play a college football season in this academic school year. So at least from that standpoint, I'm encouraged about seeing it at some point over the next few months.
Laura, though, how about the concern for the Olympic sports that go along with universities that are, you know, that the schools that don't make money, the schools that don't make money on non-football, and how much they generate? And like, I mean, I have a genuine concern that there's going to be a lot of sports that are going to be set back to club at a lot of universities just because of the economic impact of what we've seen over this short period of time.
Yeah, it's a valid concern. And I think, you know, even if you look at the numbers, football is a larger revenue generator than the 35 next sports combined. I mean, it's insane. Most of these schools, their Olympic sports put them in a negative revenue generation, and they're able to make it up via football. So to your point, for the viability of the other sports, and particularly these Olympic sports, women's sports, I mean, just across the board, they have got to find a way to generate the revenue coming from college football. And that's why I would reiterate again, the attendance is so important. It's not like the NFL. People are going to say, well, the NFL is going to play with no fans, so college football should be able to do that too. College football can't survive playing with no fans. People think that the TV money is as big of a percentage as it is in the NFL, and it's nowhere near. So it's not going to be able to be, you know, sustained just on TV money. And I'm hopeful that they will, across the board, make some sort of decision here. And it's not going to be perfect, right? There's no perfect answer here, but some sort of decision that will allow for the largest profit, the safest opportunity for the players and the coaches and the staff involved, and also the ability to sustain these other sports, which all goes hand in hand. But that's why there are a lot of people that are smarter than me working on this, and I am hopeful that it'll be some sort of resolution will be arrived at soon. The one date I think to watch, guys, as you're looking through all this, is toward the end of May. That's when most of these conferences are closed through. So that's when they're going to all meet again and reassess where they are and see if it's viable in their minds to get football players back on campus sometime around July. And that would allow for the full 6 week preparation ahead of a season starting on time, ahead of the regular season starting on time.
Laura, thank you so much. We appreciate your time. Try to get a little bit of sleep. I know you're up early for TV anyway, but with a 7 month old, Jeff and I can both appreciate it.
It only gets better.
It
only gets better, Laura. It only gets different.
I sleep is overrated, I guess. I don't know. I don't remember what it was like to sleep, but that's a minor problem to have, so I'm good with it.
Well, if you enjoyed not getting sleep in college, the rest of your life will be that way, so you'll be good.
Right, exactly.
All right, thanks, Laura. We appreciate it. Love to have you back on the show sometime soon, especially talk some football. And, of course, we're watching you on Get Up and the SEC Network as well. So thank you, Laura.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thank you,
Laura. All right, take care. Laura Rutledge on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.